You are listening to the Small Screen Podcast, part of the Invasion Radio Podcast Network. For pop culture and movie chat, check out the Popcast Podcast. And for insight on the hottest music, listen to the speaker box below. You can find all of the Invasion Radio podcasts at screeninvasion.com.
Hi, and welcome to the Small Screen Podcast, episode 42. I'm Crystal Bailey, co-host and editor-writer of screeninvasion.com, and I'm here with Marcos.
Hi, everyone. My name is Marcos Canales. You can read my blog, smallscreenhappenings.com, and I also contribute recaps to both thetelevixen.com and screeninvasion.com.
And this is the Small Screen Podcast, talking about pretty much everything about television, news, what we're watching, major happenings around the small screen. So let's just dig into the biggest entertainment news in quite a while. Disney bought Lucasfilm for $4 billion. So it's major news across the board. So yeah, what are your thoughts on that that merger?
I was a little blindsided by the news just because it wasn't something that I was aware was happening or even in the talks of happening. So when I saw that on Twitter and how Twitter blew up after the news broke, I was a little shocked by it. But the more I let it percolate and gave it some thought, I'm encouraged by the news. I think that bringing in a new entity and having a new producer take over the stories and everything like that could breathe some new life into the franchise. So I wasn't one of those people who freaked out about it and was upset and all up in arms about the idea of Disney purchasing the Star Wars franchise and Lucasfilm, like some people probably did. But then again, I mean, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fanboy out there. I mean, I enjoyed the franchise. I enjoyed the movies. I like the expanded universe, but I'm not the type of person who feels betrayed by this or was upset with Lucas in the first place because of the prequel trilogy. So it was big news, and I'm definitely excited to see where things go from here. But in the end of the day, it didn't necessarily shatter my world. What about you?
I'm not a huge Star Wars fan either. Like, I love sci-fi and everything, but I just was late to that. You know, I didn't watch it as a kid. But I do appreciate its universe, and I am a huge Disney fanatic. So it's exciting news, I think. And after the initial shock kind of wore off, because like you said, you know, being blindsided by such a huge deal that, like, nobody knew was even, like, in the works or potentially happening, just happened. But I am excited to see where it goes. The fact that there's a Star Wars 7 that's going to come out in 2015, I'm not particularly enthralled by, just because, you know, the prequels just left such a bad taste in everybody's mouth that another one, even with new talent behind it, it's still, you know, everyone's going to be super skeptical and hesitant about it. But I do really hope that this merger, like, above all things, I want to see a Star Wars park. Because, you know, Disneyland and Disney World are, like, some of the best parts of being a Disney, like, fan, going to that and experiencing the park and everything. And I would love to see what Disneyland could do, what Disney could do with, like, a Star Wars universe or something, and, like, having a whole ride and everything, whole experience to that, I think would be great. I think that is the potential I'm most excited for with this merger. So yes, it'll be a long way before we see that, but it'd be super sweet.
Yeah, the synergy opportunities are definitely there with having such a big name like Disney in charge of it now. I mean, there are people already kind of floating the idea of, oh, does this mean that Star Wars characters are going to show up on Once Upon a Time all of a sudden and things like that? And that might be a little bit out there, but when you think about it, Disney owns so many major entertainment companies now that the possibilities are endless, because now you have Marvel, you have Lucasfilm, you have Pixar, all under the same umbrella. So there are definitely some great opportunities to cross-promote within all those smaller subsidiaries. Going back to the movie, though, like I said, I wasn't one of those people who was offended by the prequel trilogy, and while I admit they were not as good as the first three, I kind of liked them for what they were, so I'm more encouraged by Episode 7, mostly because of just the wealth of stories that are out there. I mean, if you include the expanded universe tales, there's so much stuff out there, and one of the reasons why I like things like Star Wars and sci-fi is the fact that they build these really intricate worlds and these massive stories, and so, you know, I've always thought that this story from the expanded universe could be really interesting or entertaining, and I'd like to see that adapted into a movie someday. And there's a chance that it never will. It might be brand new stories, which is all well and good, but I would say out of everything, Episode 7, you know, it's not something that I'm against. I do think that I'm willing to give the franchise and the properties a second chance or a third chance or however many you want to call it. And, you know, I understand why people would be hesitant about it, but people are going to go regardless and just to complain about it. So that's the fun stuff about pop culture is sometimes complaining about stuff is more entertaining than being happy with it. So we'll definitely have to see where it goes from here. But I guess to bring it back to the small screen, I mean, they've been talking about a live-action television show for some time now, and I guess having the clout of ABC or Disney, potentially ABC behind it, might be able to finally see it come to light, much like the Avengers, as we've been seeing over the last couple of months. So possibilities are endless, and at the end of the day, you know, I'm happy, I'm excited for it, but I'm by no means going to drastically change my life because of the news.
Yeah, I mean, there have been people who have, like, nonstop been dissecting this since it broke, and we're not the hardcore fanboys that, you know, have been doing that. But it is exciting, and I'm excited to see where they go with it, and, you know, this merger will have, like, repercussions for years, obviously, because, like, we're going to see TV shows and movies and, you know, like I said, maybe one day a theme park. But, yeah, it's pretty exciting times to be... be a Disney fan or to be a Star Trek fanboy.
Or a Star Wars fanboy.
Yeah, Star Wars fanboy. Oh, man.
I know you're a Trekkie at heart, but we'll let that one slide, I guess.
But yeah, so there was other news about TV this week, even though that was the dominant story. Yeah, so Fox, they had a mid-season show. They have a mid-season show called The Goodwin Games, where they announced that they're cutting The Order. You know, normally a series order, like a season order is 13 episodes, and they announced that it's going to be, I believe, 7 instead. So, yeah, this is by the How I Met Your Mother team, so what are your thoughts on this development?
I would say I'm largely indifferent because part of my hesitations about this show had to do with the creators. I'm not going to go into another How I Met Your Mother rant, but a lot of the goodwill that I had for Baze and Thomas has been spent because of what they've done with that show. So the idea of the Goodwin Games with that creative team behind it wasn't going to bring me in off the bat. Now, that said, there are certain aspects about the show that I do like. I mean, it is going to be a single-camera comedy, so that alone is going to set it apart. The concept of, I want to say it's about these three siblings who might have been estranged but are brought back together when their father dies, and in order for them to get their inheritance, they have to play these games that he's devised to kind of bring them back together and rekindle that bond they had as kids. And all of that stuff is all in my wheelhouse. Like, that's stuff I really do enjoy. And I guess one of the reasons why I'm not sad to hear that the episode order was cut is because, in a lot of ways, I'm already getting that from Ben and Kate, so I don't need another show that has the similar beats. So I'm not going to be broken up by the Goodwin Games not having as many episodes. And on top of it, I mean, I don't know if Fox really had much of a choice, because over the last couple of weeks, due to the debacle of the rain out during the playoffs and Major League Baseball. They had to shift all these shows around, and some of their comedies were shortchanged, so they gave them additional episode orders. Like, I want to say Raising Hope got additional episodes, as well as New Girl and The Mindy Project. So they were just running out of real estate to begin with. So it might have just been a logistical standpoint, not necessarily a commentary on its creative potential. So, I mean, that's what my initial thoughts about this news. What about yourself? Is this something that you were planning on watching, or was it even on your radar?
I mean, I saw it when it was first talked about during, like, upfronts. You know, they have the teaser trailer type thing that looked promising. And while I am a little frustrated with How I Met Your Mother, I do appreciate the probably, like, 4+ seasons of, like, quality programming we got in the beginning there. So, I mean, I'm definitely going to check it out when it does make it to air. You know, if it should, hopefully it will make it to air. But yeah, like, I'm not, like, broken up about it. It wasn't one of my hotly anticipated mid-season shows. So, when it comes online, I'll probably check it out. But, you know, I'm not crying about it. But yeah, so, and then in other news, any 90s kid is probably, excited about it. I don't know if people are excited, maybe confused, because I know I was confused, that Boy Meets World is getting a spin-off TV show. And so I was pretty shocked because, I mean, the show is like 20 years old. But Disney Channel is in talks to set up a sequel series, and Ben Savage is involved. So if you like nostalgia, could be good. Did you watch Boy Meets World? Are you going to tune into this?
I watched it for the most part when it was on the air, but I think I watched it more when it was in syndication with the Disney Channel. So maybe a few years after it had established itself and before it went off the air. And I will say that I guess my memories aren't as fond when it comes to this show. I mean, it was still a fun show, but obviously, when I was younger, I enjoyed it, but when I grew up a little bit and started watching it again, I started to realize just how bad that show really was, especially in its latter years. So as soon as the main group of characters graduated from high school and moved off to college, I think that's when it really hit the skids. And when I remember those episodes and that era of Boy Meets World, it makes me less excited about this idea. While I appreciate the parent show for what it was and what it meant to our generation, I'm not so nostalgic that I'm probably going to be tuning in regularly to this show, but I probably will check it out if it does make it to air just to see where they go with it. So,
yeah, I mean, I'm intrigued on where they're going to go with it. I watched the show a lot as a kid. And, you know, I was totally in love with Cory and Topanga, you know, and their whole relationship and how adorable they were. So it's cute that they're going with it being their, like, their daughter and then following her, like, storyline. I don't know if I'm going to watch it, though, because it's Disney Channel. I don't watch the Disney Channel live action stuff, like, the Hillary Duff stuff, or I can't even name shows that are on the Disney Channel. So that's how much I, like, don't watch that network. But, you know, this might be enough to get me to tune in just because I am so in love with Cory and Topanga and want to kind of, you know, pick up as if they've been together this whole time. It's cute. And then, of course, we have to talk about Glee. There was new Glee news this week. Aisha Tyler is going to play Jake's mom. And Aisha Tyler, if you guys are not familiar, she was on Friends as a love interest for Ross. She is the voice of Lana on Archer. She's pretty cool. I like her, so I'm excited to see her join the show. Do you think she's a good fit for that type of role?
You mentioned her resume, and I think that's why I'm excited about this casting, because she's proven to be a good comedian. She has the pedigree of, like you mentioned, Friends and Archer under her belt to give her some of that credibility. But also, I think she's done some drama here and there, and I'm not as familiar with some of her dramatic roles. But there's nothing about what I've seen from her in the past that would indicate to me that she won't be able to handle some of those deeper moments. And so I would say from a big picture standpoint, I think it makes sense. I think it's a good choice for his mom. And I think it's a smart move to focus on him and some of the newer characters, because if by some way, by hook or by crook, Glee is able to make it to another season or even two seasons, I mean, we really need to start focusing on some of the newer blood. You know, I can understand why some people would be a little bit frustrated that we get to see Puck's brother's mom as opposed to, say, Mercedes or Tina's parents, because we still haven't met them yet. But I think it's a clear sign that Glee's preparing for that next step, whether it gets it or not. And so to start now with focusing on, you know, some of the newer characters' home lives is a smart move, in my opinion, because we've already seen Marley's mom. We got more of Marley's mom than we've seen from everyone else's parents, it seems like. So it's definitely a new era, and as opposed to being upset about it or irked by it like some people probably were, they probably said, oh, it's just another big-name guest star. You know, let's be fair. Let's see it actually play out. But I am encouraged by the news.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think this, like, guest starring or, like, parental role makes more sense than, say, if another character's parent, like, showed up and was a big name. Because of the whole, like, half-brother storyline. And we know he has, like, a troubled home life and all that stuff. So, like, of all the characters to show a parent, I think that makes more sense than, say, Mercedes or Tina or Artie, because, like, we've had no real inkling of their home storyline at all. And so to have this Jake's mom brought in makes sense, because they've already established that, you know, he's Puckerman's half-brother and he's got this whole other family and they've talked about it before, so it's not completely out of the blue. Which, you know, I think helps this news go down easier.
Definitely a good call.
Yep. And then the last bit of news, it just broke today, but the Super Bowl is going to be on CBS this year. So they announced what show gets the coveted post-Super Bowl time slot. And they picked Elementary, which I think is a big sign of confidence in the show. And it kind of makes me want to start watching again, because I'm like, man, they must really think it can fit with, like, and keep a good percentage of Super Bowl viewers. What do you think about the Elementary Super Bowl news?
I wasn't too surprised when the news broke that Elementary was going to be getting the post-Super Bowl spot, because it's the only new show on CBS that has any legs to it and any life at this point, so if they wanted to use that spot to help build a show, the only option was going to be Elementary, because Vegas was slow out of the gate, and it's probably going to be on life support towards the end of the season. Obviously, say like Partners was pretty much dead on arrival, so they're not going to waste that spot on them. You know, you could make the case that maybe an established show could have benefited as well, like, say, Two Broke Girls, The Big Bang Theory. But those two in particular are already established enough, and they have their audience by this point, that, again, you have to think of the future. And right now, the only real show that could use a little bit of a boost is going to be Elementary. I mean, sure, there's Person of Interest and some other shows here and there, but it just is the most logical choice, I think, to put Elementary there. And I'm just glad that it's going to be a scripted show versus, say, reality, like they did last time CBS had it. That's when they debuted Undercover Boss, which in the long run was a good idea and it worked out for them. But I think this podcast is very pro-scripted entertainment, so I'm just happy that kind of programming is what we're going to be getting in such an important time slot, as opposed to just another run-of-the-mill reality TV show that, while in the long run may be a little bit more mainstream, I'm just happy that we're getting back to the basics when it comes to programming after the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and I totally agree. And even though I do like Undercover Boss, that's one of my few reality shows I've probably watched. It's just so moving. But I do appreciate that Scripted is getting the limelight in this situation. And, you know, I do think Elementary makes sense because it can be the standalone episode where, you know, if you haven't watched Elementary ever before, you can kind of tune in and be like, oh, okay, modern Sherlock Holmes. I get it. There's, like, not a lot of backstory necessarily needed because it's, you know, a procedural. There's the case. There's the mystery of that murder or crime or whatever. So, yeah, I guess that makes it easy to digest for any viewers who just, you know, happen to not change the channel.
Yeah, and that's definitely a great point because I will say that unlike a Vegas or even a Person of Interest, Elementary is probably one of their more mainstream shows. I mean, if they really wanted to go gangbusters, they just put NCIS there. I mean, they would get like 20 billion viewers if they did that. but, you know, CBS is at least forward-thinking enough to put on a show that's new, doing relatively well, could use some help, but is still accessible enough to the modern or the everyday viewer who might just be tuning in for a good football game and sticks around. Whereas I can't see Vegas doing that as well, even though I do think Vegas is more in line with CBS's demographic. I don't think you can go wrong with a straightforward police procedural with a little bit of a twist like Elementary is. So.
True. Very true. So I think that wraps up all of the news for this week. So what have you been watching?
The first show I quickly wanted to talk about is Grimm, mostly because season 2 has been largely, I guess hit or miss is a good way to put it. They've had some really good episodes this season, but they've had a string of duds, I would say, over the last couple of weeks. But it really did have new life over the last two episodes. Last week's was the La Llorona episode for Halloween, and it dealt with that folklore and the ghost story behind it, and that was a really good episode. And it was able to maintain some of that momentum with this past Friday's episode, which dealt with a vigilante Grimm who's killing Vessin, and people are thinking if, you know, it might be Nick, and he has to clear his name within that community. And it brought back some good characters like the beaver Vessin named Bud. I always get a kick when he's on our screen, and I think he's a really good complimentary character for this world. So I'm always happy when he's given stuff to do, and so I was happy to see him. And Monroe was brought somewhat back into the fold this episode. And I think one reason why the last few episodes have been weaker in some ways is because he's been off doing his own thing, whether it be running Rosalie's spy shop or dealing with trick-or-treaters. He's been separated from Nick and his world and his job, and so bringing Monroe back into that realm was satisfying. And I just think it was an interesting story. You know, it still has some of those police procedural aspects to it, but within that genre, you know, the copycat killers are always kind of interesting to me. So they utilize that trope, and I just think from top to bottom it was an entertaining episode, and I'm hoping that it's a sign that Grimm has righted the ship a little bit, even though I don't think it's gone off the rails by any means. I just think that it was a good example of what this show can do really well, and I just hope we get more of those down the line.
Yeah, no, I agree. The season's been very hit or miss, but I think what's good to note is that the good episodes, I think, have been the best of the series, like way better than last season. And because they bring in the mythology, they bring in Monroe a good amount. And yeah, like this last episode was great with the copycat killer, like the copycat Grimm. And plus I just love seeing, I don't know the actor's name, but the Ryan guy, the intern, he was also on Bones. You know, he's like good in his roles. And so it was nice to see him back on my TV because he's been off Bones for a while.
Yeah, apparently he's just typecast as interns at this point. So anytime you need an intern, go to the blonde guy from Bones. He'll fill in for you.
He'll fill in. He does a good job unless he wants to kill you.
Now, really quickly, was that a tip-off to you? Like, the fact that he was on the last couple of episodes, did you kind of see that as a sign that he was going to have a bigger role in a future episode like this?
I mean, I figured he would have a bigger role at some point, but I didn't expect him to be a bad guy,
mm-hmm.
you know, because he does have that, like, sweet, innocent persona, like, the nice guy type, which, you know, he was on Bones, and he seemed to be on Grimm as well. And so when he turned out to be the bad guy, I was surprised, but I was not surprised that he got some meat. You know, I mm-hmm. was expecting him to get some bigger part eventually.
Yeah, because you don't hire a squintern just to be in the background. So I wasn't surprised that he had more to do, but I guess I should have seen him as the killer because in hindsight it makes sense. Because like I said, he's somewhat recognizable. You want to, you know, utilize an actor like that to his fullest potential. But yeah, I was a little thrown off by that reveal that he was the bad guy. That said, I do think that they at least made him interesting because apparently he's a self-hating Vesson who was trying to do what Nick wasn't able to do, and that little nugget made what could have been a very cliched twist a little bit more interesting. And I still think they have a potential to keep him around because he's not dead. I think he just got arrested. So I'm actually excited by the possibility of him returning at some point down the line.
Yeah, you know, I hadn't even really thought about that, but I would totally welcome him to come back because we didn't really learn everything there is to know about him either. Like, we just know he's some type of Vesson who couldn't deal with what he was, and we don't really know his backstory. Like, we got to see his mom a little bit being drunk, and, like, we know he tried to be a Grimm, and so there's still a lot of unanswered questions that, like, if he came back for another episode, I would be happy with it.
Me too. And really quickly, to stay within the realm of genre TV, we're going to talk a little bit about The Walking Dead. Now, right off the bat, we're going to put a spoiler warning out there because if you haven't watched this week's Walking Dead, you pretty much should do that no matter what. Just watch it.
Big stuff happened. So if you haven't watched it, just fast forward like 10 minutes or however and make sure you don't ruin it for yourself because it was a good episode and big things happened.
Exactly. So talking about those big things, unfortunately we lost two of the survivors this week on The Walking Dead. Both Lori and T-Dog met their fates. And what was, like you said, a really, really strong episode of The Walking Dead, at least when it comes to the prison. I will say that the Woodbury stuff never quite clicked for me, and every time that we shifted locations to Woodbury, I felt the episode deflate a little bit because I was so intrigued and enthralled and excited about what was going on in the prison. You know, who was the saboteur? Who was the one letting in the walkers? Obviously, Lori goes into labor, but she needed the C-section and ultimately sacrifices her life for her children. And all that stuff in the prison was just, from bell to bell, great entertainment. And really, The Walking Dead hitting its stride and being the show I think we all wanted it to be. You know, it's obviously sad to see some of the main characters go. Even though I didn't like Lori, and I've said as much on this podcast that she's probably one of the most unlikable characters in a long time, even I felt emotional when she died, and I do feel like the episode did a good job at redeeming her, especially with that goodbye scene with Carl. You know, no matter who you are, even me, who's apparently dead inside, because I'm not a fan of Ben and Leslie on Parks and Recreation, even I was moved when a mother decides to give her life for the betterment of her children. I mean, you have to be, you know, emotional about something like that unless you truly are just a robot, and I think I'm not quite there yet. So But again, like I was saying, I think that moment, in my eyes at least, made her a character I cared about even for that split second before she died. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on just the episode in general, but Lori's death in particular?
Yeah, you know, like you said, even though she was probably the most hated character on the show, her death was moving, and the way she died and the way that her goodbye went, I think it redeemed her as a character. This third season, you know, she was really just not likable in season one, but especially in season two with the way she handled and manipulated Rick and Shane. So she, like, there was really a lot that had to be done to redeem her. And I think this season did it, you know. First, in the first few episodes, we kind of got more, like, insight into her and, like, her and Rick's relationship and how it was working or not working, you know, in this zombie apocalypse. But her death, it was really moving, you know, to see a mother, you know, sacrifice everything for her kids and the possibility for them to have a future, especially given the state of, you know, the world that she's in, to believe that, like, bringing a kid into this world is the best thing and, like, there's still hope for them, was a really great moment. And her goodbye speech to Carl was great. The fact that Carl had to be the one to, you know, make sure she didn't come back as a walker, and, like, him saying, like, it's my mom, like, basically that's why he had to be the one to do it and not Maggie, like, it was a really well-handled moment all around. The season, like, of Walking Dead is just really, like, so far ahead of last season in terms of quality and, like, character development and everything. And it's amazing. And, like, kudos to Glenn Mazzara and all of them, you know, for writing the ship.
Yeah, yeah. Talking about Carl's decision to be the one to make sure that Lori didn't come back as a walker, like you said, that was pretty much a defining moment for him as a character. And I think that anyone who was irritated by him last season because he always got into trouble, which I was never one of those people. I mean, he's a little kid. He's going to get into trouble. That's just what he was there to do. So it really wasn't his fault. But I do think that was him, you know, losing his innocence and really becoming this tragic figure. And hopefully, you know, Glenn Mazzara and his writing staff will be able to capitalize on that. But I think it was a standout moment for him, as well as a standout moment for Rick when he found out what had happened. And they did that brilliantly. I mean, part of it was because they were all split up, so he didn't even know where Lori and Carl were, and he was too busy trying to figure out who was behind the mayhem. And they're back in the yard congregating, and he just hears the cry of the baby. You know, that was just beautifully done, and he turns around, and it dawns on him what happens. And he just falls to the ground in grief. And great stuff from Andrew Lincoln. But all around, I think all of the performances in that storyline were really strong. And how did you feel about T-Dog dying?
Well, this is another case where, you know, we didn't... It's not that we didn't like him like we did with Lori, but, like, he was just a vastly underdeveloped character throughout all of Season 2. Like, Season 1, he had his moment, like, where with Merle and everybody. But then, like, since then, he probably had, like, a line an episode. He wasn't really a full three-dimensional character. And yet, again, they were able to, like, redeem him a bit in his death by having him have this heroic moment, this self-sacrificing moment where he literally, like, throws himself at the zombies to, like, so they can feed on him rather than Carol. What was great, and, like, we still don't really know what happened to Carol. That was one of the cliffhangers of the episode. But hopefully, you know, his sacrifice wasn't for nothing, and she's still somewhere just hiding out. Do you think that his death was, like, his shining moment, or, like, unnecessary? What are your thoughts?
Oh, definitely. I do think that it was one of his key moments. And I'll be honest, I was a little bit irked that his standalone episode was also his last episode. Because like you said, he's been woefully underdeveloped over the first, you know, season and a half, give or take. And like you said, especially in season two, he was relegated to being just a bit player. But I do think that in hindsight, you know, we should have seen this coming in some ways, because I do think he was given more to do this season. Like, he was, you know, a solid third in command after Rick and Daryl. Like, he was always going on missions with them, and he was starting to get a little bit more of his own personality out there. And like I'd said, during this episode, he had the chance to shine even before he made that sacrifice. Like, he was the only one willing to let the two surviving prisoners join their group because he was just tired of death. And so that should have been a key indicator, you know, that give him something to do and they make him a good guy. The writing was on the wall at that point that something bad was going to happen. And I just wish we'd seen more of those types of moments and scenes before tonight. So I can't say that I'm upset that he died. I do think he went out in a good way, and they did right by him the way they wrote him out. But, you know, there's some interesting stuff that they showed us in this last hour that they could have prolonged over the last couple of seasons. They just didn't want to, or they didn't have the time to, or whatever reason. And I do think that was a missed opportunity, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, that's true. He's been around, and like you said, he became like a key player this season, but they definitely should have used him more in seasons prior, especially because he is like the only remaining like black character who could have provided a diversity and a differing of opinion and, you know, something to the group. But instead, he kind of got pushed to the wayside until it was his demise.
Yeah, I mean, and that's an interesting point. But I mean, there is Oscar, the new guy, the new prisoner. So he could, I guess, in theory, fill that role if it needs. I mean, it's always iffy to talk about race on television, but if there's a quote-unquote quota that The Walking Dead needs to fill, at least they have someone, I guess, to fill the void. And
that's true. at least they have some, like, people of color, diversity. It's not all just, you know, middle America, whatever. But, so, I mean, I'm glad there's Glenn, and I'm glad there's now somebody else, so it's not just, you know, the sheriff and Carol and everybody.
And to be fair, I mean, he was a black guy who lasted a lot longer than other black guys in a horror show.
Normally in horror, like, the horror genre, they're the first to go.
So, more power to him.
but yeah, no, this season's been great. To go back to, like, one of your earlier points about Woodbury, like, this was the first episode, I think, where they really tried to, like, go back and forth a lot between the two. I mean, like, in the first episode, they had, like, maybe two scenes of Andrea and Michonne, and then they did their separate episodes where we didn't see the other storyline at all. And I do think that it kind of messed with the momentum a little, where, like, the stuff at the prison was so intense and so engaging, and then you go to Woodbury, and it's, like, people sitting around drinking tea. I didn't think it was bad, and sometimes, you know, the prison stuff was so intense that it was kind of nice to get a breather. And I think also maybe that's because I didn't watch it with commercials, like I was fast-forwarding. So, like, if you watched with commercials, maybe the commercials were enough of a breather for you. But for me, I think it was a nice change, and to see a bit more of Michonne and the governor, what was interesting. And, like, I do like that storyline overall, but, yeah, the prison and the birth and everything was way more intense and, like, way more engaging.
I'm glad you brought that up, because that was something I was thinking about while I was watching the episode, and after I was, after it ended and doing my write-up and everything, it was something that stuck out to me, because it just didn't strike that balance well enough for me. Because like you mentioned, it was doing a decent enough job of having just the prison and then just Woodbury, and then when they tried to combine the two, you know, just tonally it was off, pace-wise it was just a little bit off. And it made me seriously wonder whether it would be beneficial for the show to take a one-on, one-off approach where one episode is just focused on Woodbury and then the next one is just focused on the prison. You know, I think that could be one way to fix that problem, if it's even a problem. Maybe I'm one of the few people who was actually kind of bothered by that.
No, I agree. I think that worked out really well for the two episodes they did do that. But, like, eventually, like, it's leading to this point where they're going to meet with, like, Merle and Daryl, I'm sure. Like, it seems like where he goes, you know, out to find them. But, yeah, like, I kind of wish they, especially for this episode, with the intensity and the deaths and everything, I wish we were able to spend more time in the prison to, like, find out about the prisoners and Andrew, the one who set up the whole thing, and then also to, like, spend more time with the other two characters before their demise.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one of the reasons why it was just a little bit off for me is because, at least at this point in the story, there's not enough tension in Woodbury to keep me interested, because, I mean, we know that there's something off about the governor and his wall of aquariums filled with zombie heads. Like, obviously there's there's something not quite right with him, but we know that, and, you know, and Andrea doesn't. So right now she's just smitten with this guy and picking him over Michonne. But even in that area, I mean, we don't know enough about Michonne and Andrea to really care at this point. At least I don't, because we haven't established their relationship. We just know they've been hanging out for the last couple of months and they've helped each other survive. But right now, we know more about Andrea and the governor than we know about Andrea and Michonne. So, you know, I can kind of see why where the writers are going by saying that Andrea's decision to stay in Woodbury was somewhat of a slight to Michonne and a betrayal. But, I mean, we don't know enough about those two to really, for that moment to have an emotional impact like it probably should have. So I think that's one of the reasons why I'd like to see more of Woodbury, and I do think there's a lot of potential there. And like you said, there's going to be that inevitable showdown, and I'm excited to see that happen. But they need to ratchet up some type of tension and have some real stakes there, as opposed to just them living in this kumbaya-type society and the governor hitting golf balls at zombies for some reason. Like, there's just not enough there for me to get excited about. That's not to say it won't get there sooner and later. I just want it to amp up something at this point in the story.
Yeah, no, and I completely agree that we don't really know enough about Michonne to really be invested in her storyline and her and Andrea's, like, friendship. And I don't, like, I didn't read the comics, so I don't know if this is the case, but I feel like her stoic silence works better in comics than they do on television, because, like, maybe there's, like, thought bubbles or something in the comics or something. It just doesn't, it doesn't have as big as an effect on TV, you know? Like, she's just kind of there and observing, and I get that she's this badass character who, you know, had slave zombies and chopped off their heads like nothing. But beyond that, we really don't know much.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. But at the end of the day, great episode, even with some of those, you know, duller moments in Woodbury. I think from top to bottom, pretty solid, maybe even a benchmark episode for the series. I know that we talked about some of the previous season 3 episodes being up there, but I would say in some ways it might have surpassed some of the previous episodes. What about you? Do you think that this is a pinnacle episode for The Walking Dead, or did it fall short of being up there with some of the greats?
No, I think it could. It could be like the Woodbury stuff, you know, we've talked about kind of weakens it a little. I feel like maybe it might not be the strongest episode because of that, mm-hmm. but we'll be feeling the repercussions of this episode for the rest of the season because of these big deaths and the birth. And so this is definitely a turning point, I think, plot-wise for the series. So, yeah, I think it'll be memorable for sure.
Cool, cool.
So to completely switch gears, the show I want to talk about is not genre, not gory, but it's the show I think that I've actually been surprised at how much I've been enjoying it this season. It's Don't Trust the Bee in Apartment 23. It premiered really late, so there's only been, I think, 2 episodes. But so far I think it's been really funny and, like, just, like, constant jokes. And this last episode, the Halloween episode, I thought was kind of genius because it follows follows Chloe going around doing her like trick, and every Halloween she like finds somebody and figures out their like the worst way to ruin their life, given their like interests and goals and all that stuff. And by the next Halloween, she's done it. So we see that she made this girl like who was really thin and on the career to on the ladder to success or whatever. And she like became her nutritionist, and now she's like huge. And we saw another example. We saw a couple of examples of her doing that in years prior. And then this year, she found this guy who was a director of this movie she hated that James Van Der Beek was in, and decided to date him and then break up with him, like, in his family, in his childhood bedroom, just the way his mom, like, reminding him of his mom and all this stuff. And basically, we find out that this whole time they've been conning each other, and they, like, follow all these romantic comedy movie tropes, because Chloe's, I guess, biggest fear or, like, way to ruin her life was to make her live out a romantic comedy. And as a fan of romantic comedies, like, I recognized all the tropes, and I thought it was hilarious, and they used, like, really great, like, clever cues for all of them. Like, my favorite was when they are talking about the relationship, the When Harry Met Sally music starts playing, and they do the whole, like, story of their meet cute and finishing each other's sentences, and it's just like totally out of the movie, like in terms of like the vibe and everything. I thought like every single note like that was really well done. And yeah, like I think the show, like in the couple episodes, I think has been pretty strong, which is surprising for me, because if you guys listened to the show last season and remember, I only watched this show because they put it on Hulu in advance. So, if that's your strategy, network people, I say stick to it, because it obviously worked for me. But yeah, have you been watching Don't Trust the Bean?
Yeah, I've been keeping up with it. And I will say that I'm probably more of a fan than you are, because I did watch all of it last season. And I've been happy with the first two episodes of season two. Since I'm not the biggest rom-com fan, I didn't like this one as much as the premiere episode, which was very James Van Der Beek centric.
And oh yeah, that was great too, though.
Yeah, it was a good episode as well. And I think he's at this point he's the main reason I watched the show. So the fact that he was sidelined a little bit in the second episode kind of took the wind out of the sails for me. But I did appreciate how it did satirize the romantic comedy tropes, like you talked about, and I do think that was really clever. And one of the aspects that I've always been somewhat lukewarm about was June, played by Juma Walker. I don't think she's at that level to bring the funny, like, say, James Van Der Beek or Kristen Ritter at this point. Even Luther, DB's manservant, like, he's even funnier than Juma Walker is. But I did like what they did with her in this episode by making her the best friend of the romantic comedy lead who ends up with a schlubby guy. Like, I think that was somewhat smart and a good way to poke fun at the genre. So while I won't say that it was even one of my favorite episodes of Don't Trust the Bee, I definitely appreciated what it was doing within its crazy mixed up world and what it was saying about just romantic comedies in general. And it also had the craziest cameo, because its teammate on Tuesday night is Happy Endings.
Oh yeah, that was great.
And they had this whole scene where June splices together this, I guess, a fanfic a video of Chloe with Dave from Happy Endings. And I just thought that was brilliant, because those two shows work so well together. I'm a little bit bummed that that means that Happy Endings exists in Don't Trust the Bee's world, so we can't see Zach Knighton show up. Unless he is Dave. I don't know. It's going to be weird. I don't know, but
I mean, they have James Van Der Beek as himself.
Like, that's true. That's true. So they could maybe
do
something
some meta
like that.
Stuff like that.
That's a very good point. But I just thought that was just a killer moment that, in some ways, is the epitome of what this show does well. It's good at poking fun at Hollywood and some of those cliches that go along with that type of storytelling. So, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely a fan. I mean, between this and some of the other shows that are on Tuesday night, it's actually kind of ranked up there, so I'll probably be checking out Don't Trust the Beef for the foreseeable future until it is canceled and moved to TBS to join Cougar Town and Happy Endings when that eventually happens.
It's not a terrible fate.
It really isn't. I'd actually prefer that, to be very honest, than having those two shows on ABC where they're not doing well, but I don't think they get the respect and the appreciation they deserve, which they hopefully would find somewhere else, but you never know.
At least they're getting more respect than Community over on NBC.
That's very true. Very true.
But yeah, so that pretty much wraps up, you know, what I wanted to talk about in terms of what I've been watching. Really quickly, you know, last week we talked about our, like, most promising, our favorite new show and most disappointing. But, you know, time to kind of check the temperature on what we've been watching and, like, what shows from this season, or not even just new shows, but any show, have you, like, cut loose and you, after tuning in for a while, you're like, you know what, this season's not for me, and you're going to spend your time on other shows.
Well, you talked about Don't Trust the Bee, which made fun of romantic comedies, and that's a good segue because the one show that I've pretty much cut bait on and have cleaned my hands of is a show that relies on romantic comedy tropes as well, and that's Fox's The Mindy Project. In some ways, I'm still glad that the show is on air, mostly because I'm happy when someone like Mindy Kaling gets to headline her own show and is also the creator and the boss behind the scenes. I think that just says a lot about the state of comedy and the state of television today. I just wish it was funnier. And I've watched, I think, the first three episodes, all the way up until the Halloween episode, didn't laugh once throughout the first three episodes. Nothing about this show resonates with me. I don't find Mindy's character that likable. I think she's very selfish, and I don't root for her at any point in this show's run. So I don't want her to be happy. Like, I mean, there's no reason for me to want her to be happy. So I don't care about her dating life. I don't care about her ex-boyfriend getting married. All that stuff falls on deaf ears because at the end of the day, she's just not someone I am drawn to and someone I care about. Even the people around her, in my opinion, don't bring much. Like the two male doctors who were kind of in contention to be her romantic foil. I mean, the douchey doctor isn't, I guess, douchey enough, or maybe too douchey. I don't know. He doesn't strike that balance of being crude and rude, but somewhat still likable. And then the Lothario doctor's just a worn-out cliche, and I don't care about him. The receptionists don't bring much. The new male nurse kind of makes me laugh every once in a while, or at least smile. But, I mean, I just don't know what they're trying to do with him either. So what it comes down to it is this is just a show that, you know, I didn't have a ton of expectations when it came to the show, because I always knew that right off the bat it really wasn't going to be my cup of tea, but I was willing to give it time to grow, and it just never has. And it's, at this point, probably the easiest show for me to cut, because like I said, in that Tuesday night lineup, it's going up against Apartment 23, it's going up against The New Normal, and while those two shows are flawed in their own ways, I still am entertained by them exponentially more than I am by The Mindy Project at this point.
You know, and, like, I still watch the show. I'm going to stick it out. But I can't really argue with a lot of what you're saying because I agree with it. Like, it's not as funny as I was hoping it would be. I really liked the pilot. I think the pilot has been the best of the episodes so far because I did laugh during that one. Bill Hader was, like, and I thought that was funny, the whole wedding thing and everything. But yeah, you know, Mindy Lahari, the main character, she isn't very likable. She does make it a little hard for you to root for her, and that's kind of the whole basis of the show, is rooting for her to find love. So I'm hoping, you know, that they can find a way to write that and make it so we care about her. I do like some of the supporting characters. Like, I like the male nurse. I like the male doctors who are eventually probably going to be her love interest at some point. But yeah, you know, it's just not as funny as it should be. And I think I was reading an article on Huffington Post about, like, ways that the Mindy Project could, you know, get better. And I think the main thing is, like, they need to kind of follow the example of Go On, where the ensemble, you know, each of them are quirky and have, like, a shtick, but are still real characters. And I don't think the Mindy Project's gotten there yet, gotten anywhere near that. So I think if they could build up the supporting characters and just, like, figure out a way to balance Mindy's obnoxiousness, but also make it, like, cute and something you want to root for while also laugh at some of her zingers and all that stuff, I think then the show would be a lot better. But, I mean, I'm not cutting it loose just yet. I'm still going to tune in and give it a while. I'm not going to put a number on it because I do really want the show to succeed because I do like Mindy Kaling. It's really refreshing to see you know, a woman of color be the lead character and the showrunner and one of the big writers around it. So I'm obviously rooting for it to succeed. It just isn't quite as funny as it should be, and it hopefully will be worked on.
And I will say that I'm willing to come back at some point. So I'm glad to hear that you're going to be sticking it out more so than I am. And I'll check in with you. And if you feel like it has turned that corner and they've fixed the problems with the character, then by all means, I'll come back and give it another shot because, you know, it's still early on in its run. I mean, I think it's, well, it is 3 episodes in, and comedies are notoriously known for taking time to develop and gel. And so it might be somewhat unfair for me to cut bait so soon, but there's just so many other TV shows I'd rather be watching at that time slot and just in general that it's easy for me at this point. Another show that hasn't been as easy for me to cut loose, and I haven't yet, but I'm on the verge of giving up on, is Modern Family, which probably sounds a little bit weird to some people.
I'm shocked.
And the reason why I'm close to giving up on Modern Family is because it's found its formula, and it knows what it does well, and it sticks to it so slavishly that it's no longer entertaining or new or fresh or even funny to me at this point. I've talked a little bit about in the past where episodes that fall into a very structured A plot, B plot, C plot structure don't work as well for me, like especially when they break the main characters up into their natural groupings. For example, when we have one just about the Dunphys, a story just about Manny, Gloria, and Jay, and a story just about Cam and Mitchell, those tend to be excruciatingly dull for me because I just care about the Dunphys at this point. So only a third of the episode is going to work for me right off the bat, and it's just sometimes a chore for me to get through some of those episodes. That said, when they mix things up and they have different pairings, like, you know, Phil and Jay is always going to be funny to me. Like, they just have, like, Ty Burrell and Ed O'Neill have that comic timing and rapport that they just click whenever they're together. I'd like to see other pairings every once in a while, but when Modern Family wants to stray away from its formula, I think it can still be good. I just haven't seen enough of those episodes to make me want to tune in every Wednesday night. And even though Wednesday is not the busiest night of television for me, you know, there's other things I'd rather be doing than having to sit down and watch Modern Family. And, you know, I've been honest that I was never on the bandwagon at the beginning, but season one was so good that I couldn't help but fall in love with the show. But at this point in its run, it's gotten so much love and so much acclaim that it feels like it doesn't want to break the mold and stray outside of its comfort zone, which makes sense. It wants to still do well, but even the best shows that have found success should be able to do that from time to time. And like I said, Modern Family doesn't do it enough for me to justify 30 minutes every week to watch it. So I'm not knocking it for its quality. I still think that it does things relatively well, and I can see why it's so popular and why some still think it's one of the best comedies. But it's just so routine at this point that, you know, quite frankly, it bores me sometimes. So that's why I'm on the verge. You know, I've been toying with this for a while now. When it comes down to it, I don't think I actually ever will completely you know, cut out Modern Family from my rotation, but it's no longer, you know, appointment television. I'd much rather catch up on Hulu, you know, a few days later and do something else at, you know, 8 o'clock on a Wednesday night. So,
if you cut Modern Family before you cut Two Broke Girls, I would be so upset.
Well, I dodged that bullet because I have officially cut off Two Broke Girls, and that's no longer in my rotation. I do catch up every once in a while, but yeah, that's one that no matter how many, I couldn't do it to myself much longer.
because if Two Broke Girls outlasted Modern Family on your watch list, like, you're crazy.
Well, I'm crazy, but not that crazy.
Because I do agree with you that it gets routine. It's very safe. It, like, knows what it does well, and it continues to do it. But I still enjoy it. I still laugh. I still think it's funny. So I do think that it's, like, one of the stronger comedies out there, even though it is predictable. I also agree that when they switch up the formula and they put in the different pairings and mix up who's hanging out with who for each episode and the different shenanigans, that is when the show can either be exceptional or fall flat. You know, it's like high risk, high reward. Mm-hmm. So I do wish they did that a little bit more often.
Yeah. What about you?
I've cut, we've already talked about Revolution and like how I've stopped watching it, which still I'm disappointed in that show because I've been following, you know, the buzz after the episodes and seeing, you know, if maybe like there's an exceptional episode, I'll come back to it because I do enjoy genre television and I feel like this should be in my wheelhouse, but so far the characters just were not engaging enough to get me involved in the crisis that they were all living. So, and like, just my schedule is stacked. So something, you know, I just don't have time to get to it. So I've cut Revolution and I've cut Nikita, even though I did really enjoy its earlier season. And like, I've fallen so far behind. That's more so the reason of why I've cut it than the fact that it's not quality. It's just that, like, you know, it was on Friday nights. It's kind of hard to, like, get in the routine of watching that and keeping track of, like, Grimm and the other weekend shows that I would record. And, you know, so, you know, something gets knocked down on the priority list and further down on the priority list of watching. And so now I'm like, I didn't even finish last season, and I've got all of that and this season on my DVR still just waiting for me to watch, but I just haven't been quite as motivated to make the time for it over other television. And it's not because it got bad or anything. I just, you know, think not everything makes, there's not enough hours in the day for all the TV I want to watch. So.
No, that's definitely a fair point because, you know, there's so much good television on and something has to give. And like you said, I mean, it might not even be a testament to a show's quality. It's just, you know, you run out of hours in the day. I will say about Nikita is I can kind of understand how it wouldn't be a priority to a lot of people because season two, it wasn't its strongest season. I still think season one was by far better. And there were definite issues with season two. And even towards that latter end of the run, you know, some of those episodes weren't as engaging or exciting as some of the previous ones. I will say that season two ends on a somewhat high note, and it does transition well into season three. I don't think season three is even as strong as what we've seen in the past, but I think it's working within its own confines. And like we were talking a little bit like with Arrow a few episodes ago, if you're just in for a good action show, I still think Nikita brings that. And there's some of the personal stories that are still kind of developing that have been intriguing, but, you know, that's my pitch to keep you interested, hopefully, in Nikita for the next couple of episodes. Whether you ever get to it or not, you know, it's totally up to you, and it's understandable if you don't. I still think that there's something there worth investing in. So hopefully if you find some extra time in your schedule, maybe, you know, watch an episode or two and get back and we'll see how you feel about it. But, you know, I couldn't blame someone for cutting it out completely because like I said, it's not as great as it used to be. But for me, at least, it's still pretty darn entertaining. So.
Cool. I mean, like, I haven't given up on it quite yet. I have the episodes on my DVR taking up, like, 40% of the available space because I'm like, oh, maybe one day I'll get to all of those episodes. So it's not completely out of the picture just yet. Maybe, like, one weekend I can just be like, I'm going to marathon through these, like, 7 episodes of Nikita.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I guess that wraps up, you know, the shows that I've cut loose so far, at least the ones I feel are even noteworthy. So what are you looking forward to in television in the coming week?
We talked a little bit about Glee at the top of the show, and it will be coming back this Thursday after a month-long hiatus. I think this upcoming episode is going to be focusing on the school musical, which is going to be Grease, which is probably one of my favorite musicals, I can say that fairly confidently, and so I'm excited that they went with that over other choices they could have. Although I still kind of want them to do Hairspray, just because Matthew Morrison was in the first cast of the Broadway show. And I think that'd be really cool, even though they've covered a song before last season. But I think that would be kind of fun. But yeah, I'm happy to have Glee back this Thursday. It does fill that gaping hole in between Vampire Diaries and Elementary. So that'll at least give me something to occupy that hour of my time. So what about you?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Glee as well. But the main thing I'm looking forward to is the next episode of The Walking Dead. You know, given how major this past episode was, I'm excited to see where it goes, both in the prison and Woodbury, to see the governor and Andrea and all them. So I'm really excited about the season of Walking Dead. So far, everything has been top-notch. So it's become, once again, like, appointment viewing, where instead of watching it out of, like, obligation of having watched, you know, this far, I'm actually super excited for the episode. So yeah, that's basically what I'm looking forward to this week.
Good to hear.
But I guess that wraps up our show. Thanks everybody for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at Crystal_Bailey and also at Screen Invasion.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Papa's2Cents, and don't forget to stream the Small Screen Podcast on Stitcher.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.